We're talking about using psychedelic drugs for therapy. And another word for psychedelic is entheogen, a drug that can deliver an experience of something spiritual. Call it the divine, call it God. So what is it about the psychedelic experience that makes it sacred?
The very first time I had a psychedelic experience, I was a graduate student at the University of Göttingen in West Germany.
Psychologist Bill Richards.
I knew nothing about psychedelics at the time, but a couple of my friends had participated in an interesting experiment in the psychiatric clinic nearby with some drug that was claimed to give you memories from early childhood. It sounded interesting, and I applied, and they accepted me and gave me an injection of some drug called psilocybin I had never heard of, and essentially left me alone. Not the proper way to conduct psychedelic research, but they didn't know any better. Anyway, I lay back, and my consciousness expanded, opened up to just this exquisitely beautiful panorama of abstract, colorful designs and patterns. As best I can put it into language, it felt like I became the energy flowing through those patterns, and then the consciousness kind of merged with those patterns. And all of a sudden, there was this mystical consciousness, feeling as though I was outside of history, looking back on the world of time with an incredible sense of profundity and beauty and stark reality. So, like, all I could feel really was gratitude and a sense of love and peace beyond what I ever thought was possible.
Bill Richards went on to study theology and then clinical psychology. And today he does research on psychedelics at Johns Hopkins, which makes him one of only a handful of scholars around the world who studied those drugs both back in the 60s and today. Bill told Steve Paulson about that first experience back in 1963 and how it changed his life.
I was awestruck. And of course, looking back, it was a pivotal point in my whole career, you know. I hadn't even heard the word psychedelic at that time. Aldous Huxley had coined it a few months earlier.
And we should point out, this was all legal at that time.
I mean, yes.
You could do research on this, and you didn't have to jump through a whole lot of hoops to get permission.
That's right. Not only was it legal, it wasn't even controversial. You know, I was a graduate student in good physical and mental health, and it was perfectly logical to give me a non-addictive, interesting substance if I would write up a good research report, you know, as part of academia.
You had that amazing, mind-blowing experience, that first experience with psilocybin. Did you have other psilocybin experiences then? Did you try any other drugs, any other psychedelics?
Well, the experimental design of that study was comparing two short-acting derivatives of psilocybin, so I agreed initially to take it four times. Interestingly enough, the next three experiences weren't mystical at all. They were kind of insightful, interesting sensations, but nothing like that first session. Then I had an opportunity to have one more psilocybin session with a higher dose, and that was probably one of the more profound experiences of my life. It was a return to what I had glimpsed in the first session, and it was just a very strong affirmation of the, for want of a better word, the eternal world.
Now, do you think you really had some contact with the divine?
The divine certainly had contact with me. You know, it's hard to put into words because the everyday personality, you know, my Bill Richards, if you will, essentially is transcended or dies or melts when this universal state of consciousness manifests itself.
Now, there have been a lot of twists and turns in the history of research on psychedelics. And back in the 60s, as you've been saying, this research flourished. There were thousands of people who participated in studies of LSD alone. And then it suddenly stopped,
right.
Especially
That's
in the
right.
United States. What happened?
It was just a time of radical cultural change. You know, the feelings about the war in Vietnam, the women's movement, the changes in attitudes towards race and sex. And somehow I think LSD kind of became the icon or the archetype. And Timothy Leary as its main spokesperson. And somehow all the anxieties about that cultural change and all the confusion about the misuse and the ignorant use of psychedelics got focused there.
Well, and Timothy Leary gets a lot of the blame in the way this history is usually written. You know, he was a Harvard professor, lost his professorship because of what was considered irresponsible research, and then he became this prophet of LSD in ways that seemed to not always be safely used.
Precisely, precisely. I met Timothy, and I have to say I had some very respectful interactions with him and appreciate that he did try to do some very conventional, good research early in his career. You know, he was struggling to live his best. He stumbled onto these profound mystical experiences with no training in theology or religious studies. So he didn't really have the language to communicate with the world of religious scholarship.
Do you need religious training to be able to study these substances? I mean, are you saying that you can't just approach these as a scientist?
Well, you can't experience these states without becoming interested in the realms of religion or spirituality. They're simply blatantly obvious and within us all.
So what separates the mind-blowing experience with lots of fireworks, you know, lots of sort of strong, powerful imagery, but no deeper meaning from what you would call a religious or a sacred experience?
It's important to realize that there is a continuum, a vast variety of so-called psychedelic experiences. And it depends on who the person is, where they are in life, their capacity to trust and be interpersonally grounded. It depends on dosage and purity of the substance. So there's this continuum from mild perceptual changes, kind of giggling and seeing pretty colors. And on that level, it may be interesting to some, scary to others, but it has no real value in terms of personal or spiritual development that I can see. And then, if you will, a little deeper into the psyche, there's the realm of reliving developmental experiences in your childhood of grief and guilt and traumas and kind of deciding who you are and what's important in your life. And then if you go a little deeper, people come to this symbolic archetypal realm of visions of precious gemstones and gods and goddesses. Absolutely incredible, awesome experiences that often seem to have no connection with what one has learned in life thus far. Like it comes from, I don't know if it's our DNA or the spiritual world, whatever that is, but it's kind of empirical validation of what Carl Jung called the collective unconscious.
Because you're saying that you seem to be having these images of things that you may not have had any exposure to in your life. And so the question is, where do they come from? How do you have access to them?
Right.
So can you give me an example of that?
Well, one of my favorite examples from my book, actually, is of this inner-city young narcotic addict from Baltimore who we treated in a project using LSD in the treatment of narcotic addiction. And he experienced what he called kind of strange, semi-naked dancing figures with funny hats on their heads. And then a few days later, in the waiting room, he chanced upon a book of Hindu art with pictures of Shiva and Vishnu. And he came just dashing into my office, all excited, saying, "This is what I saw. This is what I saw. This is what I saw." Hmm. And the question is, okay, how do these Indian deities get into the mind of an deprived inner-city Baltimore narcotic addict, you know?
Of course, the skeptic would say maybe he saw those images somewhere else, but they just didn't register consciously.
He might have seen them in a barber shop looking at a Life magazine as a kid one day. But even then, you'd say, of all the images he had seen in life, why would they appear, you know?
So why would they, do you think?
Well, I think they're simply there to be found within all of us.
Now, you make a distinction between these archetypal experiences that you've just been describing and an even deeper state, what you would call mystical experiences.
Right. Then there's this state beyond visionary imagery that we call mystical consciousness that is characterized by a sense of unity and profound intuitive knowledge, the everyday self just merging with something infinitely larger and more profound. We're finding in research that when that experience happens, there's often significant behavioral changes afterwards, finding it easier to be free of addictions or losing a fear of death and living more fully if you're terminally ill.
Why do you think that's the case? I mean, why do these experiences have such a sort of life-altering impact?
Well, on one hand, when they're experienced, they feel more real than everyday awareness. It kind of short-circuits estrangement and isolation and gives a sense of being interrelated with other people, if not all mankind, if not all the energy that makes up the world. There's a sense that within you there are resources of strength and courage and wisdom that, especially if you've been an alcoholic or narcotic addict, you thought were never there. And all of a sudden you feel, well, of course I can get control of my addiction, you know?
Do you see many parallels between psychedelic experiences and classic religious experiences as we read about in the sacred texts, whether we're talking about, you know, in Hindu texts or Christian texts?
Very definitely. I would go so far as to say I think phenomenologically they're identical. It's the same realm of experience. And perhaps when these experiences happen spontaneously, similar if not identical biochemical events are happening in our brains.
In other words, maybe you don't always need to take this substance to generate the experience.
Precisely. And there always have been people who access these profound states without any drugs. And that's why I called my book Sacred Knowledge. I wanted to focus on the intuitive knowledge, if you will, that accompanies these mystical states of awareness.
Bill Richards talking with Steve Paulson. He's a clinical psychologist at Johns Hopkins and author of Sacred Knowledge, Psychedelics and Religious Experiences. It might be over soon.